is like 200 billion to 360 billion extra revenue per year for the banking sector.
And for wealth managers dealing with their clients, the administrative tasks, so 30 to 40% productivity improvement, 30% productivity for asset managers, just on the administrative aspects and tasks. And those are gains.
Across the industry, AI right now, people are trying to say, how do I use it into making decisions?
So what I've started to do and the team has started to do is use...
Welcome to Sustainability Wired, where we plug into the thinking that moves sustainable finance forward. I'm Lorenzo Sa, the Chief Sustainability Officer at Clarity AI, and I'm excited today to bring in a topic around how AI actually supports and encourages and promotes the possibility of enhancing sustainable investments. We look at this really through the lens of a piece of work that we've developed recently, which is around the essentials of ESG. And AI. And in this piece, we really realize that there's three kind of pillars to how we can look at the combination of AI and sustainable investments. The first piece is really about how AI can be a sustainable investment opportunity. You know, think about investing in smart grids as one of the possible outcomes. The second pillar is really of how sustainable investments can be enhanced in their investment decision-making process, and therefore how you can use AI to leverage on better efficiencies or better performance as you try to take forward your investment decisions and sustainable investment decisions. And then the third thing is sustainable investments and AI come together when we think of the what I would like to call the ESG of AI. In other words, there's a set of governance, environmental, and social risks that, as a sustainable investor in particular, you like to look at as you look at investing and you look at investing through the lens of AI. So because of that, we today want to focus on one of the three pillars, and specifically the pillar that has to do with how to improve the investment decision-making process. And we thought that to do this would be really good to have someone that has been in the sustainable investment ecosystem for a long time, but that also on top of that has been looking at how to look at and play with AI into their investment decision-making process. So I'm delighted today to have Neil Brown on the show. Hi, Neil.
Hi there.
Look, I've known you for a long time. We're talking about 20-ish years.
I think so.
I remember the first time we met was my first day at the PRI, when you and I ended up having drinks to celebrate my first day in a dingy shortage place. It was a crazy place. It tells you something about how the industry
evolved. How far we've come. Yes.
But look, you're the head of equity at GIB Asset Management. You clearly have been in this a long time. You've been looking at research and sustainability for 20-ish years, and you've taken that and try to see how that comes into play into then how you manage your portfolio and how you manage your products. So from my perspective, that's great, and I'm really interested to understand from you a little bit where this passion on sustainability comes from, and then how did this passion end up tripping into or choosing actively the role of AI in your investment decisions?
Sure. And thank you. Great to be here. A short 20 years. Let's hope there's many more ahead of us. The passion really started, born in Dubai. I grew up on hydroelectric power schemes, Sri Lanka, Papua New Guinea. So areas that needed electricity, but are also unspoiled natural beauty. So I grew up with this tension of this needs to happen for social good, but it brings with it social as well as environmental harm and impact. So I've always been very, very passionate about those challenges. And our philosophy at the moment is challenge, solution, opportunity. So we have a sort of tagline on the team that we believe the greatest profits belong to those who solve our greatest challenges. So via head of responsible investment at Threadneedle as many, many years ago, Aviva, and then the team that I was with for a very long time, the Sustainable Futures team, and then into GIB. It's really always been about this, how can we make more money for our clients by solving these great challenges and by investing in these great businesses. So a part of that many years ago was frontier tech. So I've always been interested in how we can create problem-solving machines, and that's through long historic holdings in ASML. When I came to GIB, we launched the strategies with NVIDIA. More recently, we've added Microsoft to the funds. Mm-hmm. We think these are the names that will solve the problems. Personally, a bit of an early adopter, I kind of love tech. So I've got I studied economics, got a master's in the design of financial systems, and recently I did the Oxford Said Business School on artificial intelligence to really try and understand the mechanics as to how this is all working.
Great. Well, look, that's probably a good leeway into thinking that, in my view, across the industry, AI right now, people are trying to say, how do I use it into making decisions, being that an investor, a company, whatever it is. And the way we typically like to think about this is really through the knowledge pyramid. If you think about it, people will usually start at the bottom of that pyramid, is what data do I use to make my investment decision? But then you will quickly move up that pyramid. Is how does that become information, insights that become knowledge, wisdom, and then there's an action. And for investors, that action is taking the investment decision. And so we think that from an investment decision-making process, AI can help across those different steps in combining that with a human in the loop, at least very often, into making sure that the two things come together. Now, from your perspective, does that seem right? And in particular, you know, let's try to quantify the result of that process. You know, I think we had a report, which is a McKinsey report from 2023. It's specific to the banking sector, but basically it highlights how using Gen AI, and this is only Gen AI, not all the other types of AI, can actually improve the revenue or have additional $2.8 to $4.7 extra revenue to the banking sector. This is like $200 billion to $360 billion extra revenue per year for the banking sector. Does that seem right in the experience you're having with this, or is it like science fiction?
It's any of these forecasts are a bit of both, right? You've got to take a view. You've got to say, okay, people are doing a report. That report is now 30% quicker. What's the full-time equivalent? How long? That's what people are doing. They're like, okay, how long did it take us? Can we drive some efficiencies, and then map that forward? But these variables, I mean, we're recording this in a week of extreme variables and volatility. So we have to take a view, but that is part of being an investor. And the confidence intervals will move. But yeah, I mean, Citi in 24 had $170 billion by 2018. So these, you're into big numbers, I think, is what's nice. And what we're looking for is a big enough number, a tailwind of growth, that we're finding unconstrained growth. We're not saying that this is small. We're saying we don't know how big it is, but there's a runway here, and therefore it's a place to look at. So I think that's right. And Oliver Wyman have done great work on this. They come for sort of 30 to 40% for wealth managers dealing with their clients, the administrative tasks. So 30 to 40% productivity improvement, 30% productivity for asset managers, just on the administrative aspects and tasks. And those are gains.
Yeah. And do you have specific examples of this? Do you feel that and maybe the best example is you.
Yeah.
You know, how do you use this? How is this impacting the way you look at research? You know,
at the moment, I'm going through annual reports, I'm going through earnings, I'm going through transcripts, and I'm distilling and aggregating that data into one place and interrogating it. So what I've started to do, and the team has started to do, is use, and whenever I mention a company, others are available. I mentioned when I hold one, but there are obviously a number of systems here. But ChatGPT at the moment allows me to create my own GPT and to give it very specific instructions. So you are the first cut of an investment research. Answer only with the data that I put in here. So I'm going to go and get 10 years of annual reports. I'm going to get 10 years of sustainability reports. I'm going to get 10 years of earnings transcripts and slides. I'm going to load them into this GPT. Only look in here. And when you give me an answer, give me the specific sentence and the page number to allow for verification and citation. That then allows me to go into that, and it'll have the name of the stock as a GPT and start asking it the questions. Very quickly, and this is why I really encourage people to start, our stock review questions move from questions to prompt engineered. So not just what's the proportion of renewable energy generation when we get into the principal adverse indicators, but against our threshold, which is X, against peers, which is X. Find me the specific data. If there is no data, say no data. Not just a general question, but you are rapidly changing the way you approach that pyramid to all of it, reduce the time taken to decision.
Is this, you know, I kind of feel that there's an element of how we used to look at investment, which was data, research, look at it, make the decision, report. Is there more dynamism here? Are we actually, is this no longer a straight line? Is it more like, you know, one of these like flipper in a game show?
Yeah, and you're touching on something really, really interesting, that we are moving from linear compute, where we effectively spoke to calculators. Tell me this, 1 + 1 + 1 + 1, do that. We're moving to parallel compute. So while that GPT is answering our principal adverse indicator questions, I can be loading in the SASB materiality factors, and I can be having another one look at the peer, because most of the data we look at it's relative. Employee turnover, growth, return on invested capital, they have a value absolute, but they have a much greater value relative to your peers. So it is an iterative process. It is a predictive token generating process, and you are building it up.
And as you do that, how do you practically do it? I mean, have you seen specific names that leverage on this and that you have hooked into to try to get this information?
So we're seeing, so at the moment I'm reading PDFs quickly, right? So we went out to the sell side and we said, can we load your research into this? And at the moment, those I have spoken to, others may have a different view, but have declined.
Okay.
And said that doesn't...
Is that, they're scared?
I think they are correctly running a risk framework.
Okay, all right.
But yes, caution. And that's a good way to start.
Okay.
When dealing with people. Caution is a very good way to start.
Good.
I've got a lot of time for it. I understand it. So at the moment, we're only using publicly available documents to feed into this. But very quickly, I think that'll change. I do think this is in the long-term interest of the end client. That is what we are always guided by. That is the job. Therefore, I think it will change fast, and they will get comfortable with it, understand our models, and do that. Then, why are companies putting annual report data in PDFs? Why am I not speaking to one of their agents and just dynamically speaking to the company and just saying, give me everything you've got on ROIC in the last 10 years? And I'm delighted to say that NVIDIA released one of these at their last earnings.
Okay.
So it is the kind of investor relations agent, which is rather than downloading 10 years of annual reports, just talk to us, just chat.
So it's not just the chips.
No, they're actually using it. And we find this with a lot of the companies. And way back to, I think, SAP were one of the first to use some of their efficiency technologies within the, you can dry run it. Microsoft and Copilot, I think they've been using it a great deal internally. So that's lovely to see. And that's something we push them on, actually. If you know it's creating energy savings, if you know that these are useful, then let's have that in your disclosure. At the moment, the agent that I've seen that I referred to is financial data only, as far as I'm aware.
Okay.
So let's see some of that other data in there.
Yeah, I mean, that may be a good point. How do you see this process from a sustainability perspective? You know, is that coming across or is it lagging?
So we've always had what I think is our edge as an industry, an interest in broader and more diverse data sets. And I think there's always been a kind of a challenge of perhaps people are looking in the wrong place and you should be very focused on returns. We are extremely focused on financial returns. We think these other data sets can add value to those forecasts. We don't think that by doing the right thing, suddenly growth steps up, but we do think a deeper understanding of, I'll give the example of sort of safety equipment, how safe your car is, your supply chains, that can change consumers. So we do think this disclosure helps. So given we love more diverse data sets, a tool that allows you to process faster, more diverse data sets gives us a disproportionate advantage, in my view.
Okay, and you're talking about data sets, and I think one of the things you and I probably have heard a lot is sustainability is, oh my God, there's too much data. How do I process this? Or there's not enough data. Where's the data? How do I read a signal? Or how can I read a pattern if I don't have the information? Is AI solving one of these two sides? Is it solving just or both? Or how do you see these coming together?
Yeah, and I think in the time you and I have been working in this, you know, the initial cry was more data. You know, a lot of our disclosure requests at the beginning, a lot of surveys before corporate social responsibility reporting took over, before impact reports, it was more data. And I had some wonderful rebuttals from CEOs saying, listen, shareholders can't process the data. I've got factory level data right now. I know exactly how much energy is going through every single one of my facilities. You don't know how to process it. I think it was a fair point. This improves our ability to process it.
Okay.
So I think this is about an easier ability to drink from the fire hose. This is about summarizing, aggregating, distilling, pulling out the material things. One of the really important things that I want to convey, which is a great tip, which is do this where you are an expert. Because when you use somebody else or something else to summarize your data, you need to spot those errors. And we need to understand that hallucinations are a feature. They're not straightforward. So I think there's more and more drinking from the fire hose. And I guess we can come onto it, but there's also an opportunity to have a whole new, this is the Jevons paradox, right? If we're now able to drink from two fire hoses, do we say that's great and put one down, or do we now add a third and a fourth and say we can process even more? What else have you got?
Yeah, so what's the answer? Do you have an answer, or is it still?
Humans, unfortunately, have a habit of, if you manage to half the effectiveness of something or the cost of something, will order two. I think that's the Jevons paradox is quite clear. And that's one of the great problems with efficiencies, where you have a more efficient crop and people will just plant twice as much, you know, from terms of biodiversity. This is something we've faced a lot. So I think if you make it twice as easy, people will ask for two.
Okay, so do you have an example of where maybe you've gone down the Jevons paradox,
asking more and more.
Like, it says, I really need to get more to get my extra research enhanced.
So a bit of a passion of mine. Cars just are a passion of mine, which I know is odd given my career, but auto safety. Far too many people die on our roads, disproportionately are young and disproportionately people in developing markets, which, as we said, is one of my great passions. So I asked someone many years ago at their Capital Markets Day, how many people are alive today because of your auto safety technology? And obviously, that's a very difficult question to throw at somebody, and they say, we can't tell you that. It depends how the car was driven. I think I could see a legal team on the side, and it's a very hard question to answer. What we now have, and this is not a stock we hold, and I understand there's a lot of aspects in this one, but to focus purely on safety data of Tesla's cars. We have 9 cameras in 6 million cars. 3 million of those have full self-driving. That's 3 billion cumulative miles of data on auto safety. And that is data that not only can they use to train their models, but they do now disclose in their safety reports. And they do disclose how many millions of miles a Tesla is traveling before it's being involved in a crash versus the US average. And it's around 5 million more.
God.
So you've got and it is their own data, and the US is a broad average, but again, around sensitivities, it's a clear material impact. And that is data that we wouldn't really have been able to use or ingest previously.
That's interesting. Look, I'm still hearing an element of how do we use more data, you know, the Jevons paradox. And is there something around how to solve a limited amount of data? And maybe I'll give you the sort of experience we're finding, which is, look, issues that have to do with human rights, you know, those might not be particularly reported. So can you use AI to better process controversies, for example, around these issues? Or Scope 3 is hard to actually capture, and is there a role of satellite data to help try to see what's going on through supply chain? Or is there a modeling element around the data that's missing? So I guess what I'm trying to say is one of the things we're experiencing is a lot of AI is also being seen of filling the gaps. And is that a good thing? Or you're like, you know what? I want my reported data. That's where I start from, and this other stuff I don't really trust or I'm not really comfortable with.
Yeah, so I think the first thing is everything I've said about those Tesla cameras, those cameras could be sensors in a factory. Those sensors could be near-field sensors on clothing. So another passion of mine is human rights in the supply chain. So, and that's before we even get into embodied AI or physical AI, robots that are moving through the real world, able to monitor things. That does make people uneasy. I understand that. But yes, we are going to have, I mean, a camera in the car versus a camera in a satellite, these are the same issues. It's faster processing. It's the ability to see signals and patterns. It's the ability to read, to have deep neural nets trying to understand and predict and generate what we're seeing. So I think it does open that up. I've already caveated that safety data. It needs to go through. There's a reason we have an audit process. There's a reason we have risk controls.
Yeah.
This is a new tool in a clearly well-established regulatory framework, and it needs to be treated like that. So I want that data. I'd love it through an annual report,
yeah,
checked by an auditor, and then aggregated by our tools.
Great. So look, let me shift gear a bit. So we've kind of really looked at how AI is helping you in that process of research. You know, how do you enhance your research? Is there an element of the other end of this? So, okay, you've done all this. You now need to report to your clients. You now need to go out and address the humongous compliance burden that now sustainable investment is facing. Is this something that you see can help on that end? And if so, how?
Definitely. And again, everything that I've discussed in my interactions with the sell side, their interactions with companies, or my interaction through that chain, you can extend that chain very clearly. And really, it's not about my section or the sell side section. This is from the company to their owner. It is to the end beneficial investor. We need to get this information through the chain to the individual who owns, no matter how small, who owns a piece of this.
Yep.
And so we think everything we've discussed, so initially better reporting. We use a range of tools. Obviously, there's your fantastic selves. And we use these tools to footprint at pace, to aggregate, to distill, to understand. It's accuracy, it's timeliness, it's everything I'm using.
Okay.
And then we can benefit from it. And it brings the same challenges I'm putting to the sell side. Am I happy for my fact sheets to go into these processes? We have an incredible RFP, due diligence questionnaire engine that can hoover up all of our processes and philosophies and teams and give a swift answer. But in 5 years, would a client want to be speaking to an agent, not downloading PDFs? I think wealth management is really interesting. They're dealing with a lot of these PDFs, and I use that just as a shorthand for kind of old school tech. It isn't old, but it seems suddenly, where are the API link? Where's the data just moving?
Yeah.
So it's amazing now, but I think there's pressure on us, and therefore challenge, solution, opportunity. For maybe smaller houses to suddenly be able to deliver quite an incredible customer proposition.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, we're finding also that some of the conversations have moved from people using, say, for example, our web app to start of thinking a custom, to leverage on a custom GPT that people use within GPT of our own information. And that seems to point at towards of the tools that we typically think of, from the PDFs to the web apps, et cetera, are really starting to be challenged, which is really interesting. And you know, the conversation that, and probably for the people that you and I started working with 20 years ago, there's this concern around how compliance has taken over a lot of your work. And I do feel that there's a sense of comfort that maybe AI can be some of the things that can give you back that time to actually go back and do where the investment decision making really matters and less about just ticking the box.
And I feel this tension. Again, I remember the pressure we put under companies to report, I remember how annoyed they were, and always been rightly responded, but did make it clear to us that the burden they were putting on us, did make it clear that every meeting with an exec is a time that they are not spending running the business. And I think that the positive to take from that is these improvements on reporting and RFPs and due diligence free up investment teams to go back and act in service of that client. That's what we're trying to, that's the balance we're trying to find. Get back to the day job, go find alpha. But again, we get back into this paradox, is that if we make it easier, will there just be more reporting?
So we've looked at a number of efficiency issues, and you talked about alpha. Is there something around performance enhancement? In other words, yes, X number of hours of less research, fine, that's a huge benefit, and we gave the numbers. Is there a number, a set of numbers now around how many basis points is this going to add?
It is the question, and it mirrors the question in our playing the theme in the market. Is this delivering a return on invested capital?
Yeah.
Is this the most powerful unlock to productivity gains, or will it prove to be quite an energy-intensive distraction? And that's you see that move in the markets as to where we are. Obviously, given how much I'm using it, I believe this can add value, and we've got the Mercer's report. We've got 3-5% higher annualized returns from a 2024 paper,
okay,
which is very interesting. It's a paper. These things need to be treated with caution. And we've got Mercer's, which is actually a survey of the number of people using it, which is an indication that they feel it adds value. For me, I need this to give me a better take on long-term earnings than if I didn't have it. That is the acid test. Does it do that? Now, it's great if it does it more quickly, because then I can get on to the next one. We have a cadence. But long-term investing, does it give me a better take on long-term earnings? That's the first question. I think it does. The second question is, for how long will... So that's better than I had before. I need to be better than my counterparts. Much as I love and respect them, we're trying to beat each other.
Yeah.
So once these tools become ubiquitous, do I have an edge? How long does that... What's the half-life of that edge? Which is why I'm so keen to use it very quickly. And then the third point, so the first thing is, does it give us an edge? Second is, how long will it persist? And then the third is, what does it do to the underlying market structure? Does this, and we're speaking very volatile times, but if everybody uses these tools, does that improve price discovery and things come down? Does it increase volatility because everyone is using the same tool and getting the same answer? Do we herd? And these, we do not know.
Is there proper, let's say, responsible AI approach, and how would you kind of highlight it? What would be the main elements of that?
Yeah, and this is something we've worked on. This is something I've personally kind of drawn some principles together, and I won't take you through all of them, but I think the way to think about it is we have a framework. Right? We know what systems you should put confidential information into and which systems you should not. We know the sort of data that has been audited and is reliable, and we know that if you just put in, is this stock going to do well, you're going to get poorly trained data on historic. So I'd start there.
Okay.
FCA, CFA, SFDR, EU taxonomy, you know, we have UCITS regulations. Start there and operate within the framework. It may be that frameworks evolve, but right now that's where we have. So the sort of key ones are data quality and integrity. Any historic data reflects a previous time. We know, given how many problems we still have in our society, that there were biases in that data.
Yep.
And we have to try and mitigate them and control them. You have to know where it came from. You have to know that you can use it for this reason, not that it was pulled for a legitimate reason or maybe changed jurisdiction. So data integrity and quality is key. The quality of the decision has to be key. We have, I use the CFA Institute, but we need to due care, prudence, diligence. That doesn't change. If I use this as a first cut, that's what it is. And I need that. What's the page number? How do I check it? Where do I use it? And I like it is a CFA. Investment decision makers should understand the parameters used in models and the basis of any research inputs or investment recommendations.
Good.
A lot of our compute power at the moment is getting the answer, and I think we need to dedicate much more of it to showing me where the answer came from. It's not impossible. They are hidden layers. They are within the neural nets, but we could dedicate more time and compute to surfacing that.
Look, I think we need to wrap up quickly. So I think I'm going to give you a couple of these quick fire round questions. You got to jump into and really answer quickly. So
go for it.
I'll cut you off if you don't. So first question, open or closed models?
Closed. Open models can move. They can drift. You need a verification and a valid model that has been tested, and then you can use it.
Should investors look at explainability, or should they think about predictive power?
Yeah, at the moment, we're 99 to 100% predictive power. That's great. I think that should swing to near a 50-50. We need to know what's behind the answer we're given if we're going to rely on it.
So traceability. AI, environmental savior or terminator?
I'm firmly in the savior camp. Okay. I understand the implications, and it's a great piece from the IEA overnight. But I think this solves some of the great challenges of our time, and I wouldn't throttle that incredible opportunity because we don't have our grid clean enough yet.
Good. Do you see AI democratizing sustainable investing or concentrating power?
Democratizing. I think the evidence of general purpose technologies is that initially the people who can go first will draw. And I'm talking about using effectively off-the-shelf models. There are investors out there who will be training and doing a great deal more. I'm really excited to see what the bigger players do. But proportionately, you democratize when you get access to all of this fast information.
Amazing. Thank you. So, look, I want to move to our art twist, which where we bring in, ask every guest that we bring in, basically the idea to think about a piece of art that they like that has a sustainability twist. And as part of that, really look at, first comment on the piece of art that the previous guest has brought, and then comment on your own.
Great.
So,
let's see it.
Rose Easton brought this,
I saw this.
Amazing
yes.
piece of art, which yep. I was quite, you know, it's interesting how you can take a piece of cardboard and make something out of
great
it.
Great work.
So, what do you think, and what did you bring for us?
So I love the story here. I love the work, and what I really loved about Rose's approach was she brought it back to the area where the seagrass had gone, which is not just a problem for the biodiversity, but cleaner waters, more tourism, more money. I'm an investor at heart, yeah. So if you can get this right, if we can live in symbiosis, protect obviously these important ecosystems, but she brought it right back to financial materiality.
Awesome.
Do the right thing. Okay, I brought in Wave of Change.
Love it.
By Zach Noyle, an amazing surf photographer. There's a few things I love about this. First of all is I think a lot of your time as a photographer must be spent waiting for that bit of plastic to move, going to grab it. I've actually challenged a very well-known natural wildlife photographer on this. And you're frequently moving things out of shot, out of background, to show this pristine nature that isn't quite accurate. So what I love about this is that at some point they must have just said, look, the current's not going to change, or the wind's not going to change. Let's get out there. And let's show this as it is. And I would encourage people, because sustainability is sometimes a little bit guilt-laden, a little bit, you know, don't do this, don't do that, go on holiday. They got out there and they had a surf. And Zach's other photography, he has a huge amount of incredibly beautiful art that will show you how wonderful our oceans are. They don't all look like this. This was a particular.
Okay.
But I love that mix of, I'm not going to pretend there's no plastic in this environment. I'm going to highlight it. And then the image, and I took this straight off the wall above my desk. This is humans. We're getting out there and having fun. We can fix this. These things aren't going to be fixed by, oh, let's just go home, or this is terrible, let's not come back here. No, let's take a photo and share it. Let's give an image. Let's be at our best, playful, enjoying it, movement. And I think very hard to assess the impact. Maybe I'll ask an AI model, but it'd be interesting to see what impact this has had around the world.
Well, part of why we have this on the show is because we think the art can actually help communicate some of the things we do in our industry. I think we've failed a bit in that communication element, if we especially think of where we are today in the world. Neil, thank you so much.
I think
I've learned a lot. I think we've covered a lot of ground in terms of what AI can actually help do for sustainable investors, both from a perspective of productivity and efficiency gains, as well as from a perspective of potential performance enhancement. I think it's a little bit like when humans discovered fire. You know, this helped it in terms of, you know, light, warmth, protection, etc. But people got burned. And so you needed to make sure that you had the elements that of, you know, safety guards that would ensure that people got protected against the possible negative elements of fire. In the same way, I think sustainable investors can totally benefit from the role of AI, and I hope what Neil presented today will inspire many of you. But we also need to do that keeping in mind what are the environmental, social, and governance risks that are behind that. Thanks again, Neil, for being with us here today, and thanks to for Curtis File and all the production that is behind the show. For us, this is great. We would just love for you to let us know what you think about the show. If you enjoyed it, please like, subscribe, and do comment what you think sustainable investment can benefit or not on the use of AI. So we look forward to waiting to see you at the next show. And in the meantime, stay wired.
Copyright 2025, Clarity AI, all rights reserved. Clarity AI does not assess current market trends, legal or regulatory developments, but only opines on recent ESG-relevant developments. The information and data contained herein are proprietary of Clarity AI and or third-party content providers. These are intended for informational, non-commercial use only and may not be copied, distributed, or used in any other way, including via citation. They are not directed to or intended for distribution to or use by India-based clients or users, and their distribution to Indian resident individuals or entities is not permitted. These do not constitute an endorsement of any product, project, investment strategy, or consideration of any particular environmental, social, or governance-related issues as part of any investment strategy, nor an investment advice or expert opinion, are not part of any offering and do not constitute an offer or indication to buy or sell securities, and have not been submitted to nor received approval from any relevant regulatory bodies. Clarity AI assumes no responsibility for the reliability, completeness, or accuracy of any opinion provided herein, and makes no representation or warranty as to any of the information, including, without limitation, any representation or warranty that the information or any portion of it is accurate, complete, or suitable for a particular purpose. Clarity AI nor its content providers are responsible for any damages or losses arising from use of this information, and use is subject to conditions available at clarity.ai.